Basically, it will be mostly a survey talk about spectral properties of large random matrices. So let me just start with a standard Wigner random matrix. Consider n by n matrix with random entries. Right? The matrix is emission, or in principle you can study real symmetric case as well. And the assumptions are that, let's say, off-diagonal entries are from the diagonal. IID, independent, identically distributed, complex random variables. Also, the diagonal entries are real, of course. And let's again assume that they're independent, identically distributed. So this is the standard Wigner model or Hermitian random matrices. And the idea is to study the eigenvalues that naturally are random in this situation. The classical result of Wigner, which is called semicircle law, tells us that if a second moment is finite, okay, then first of all, eigenvalues of this matrix are of order square root of n, which you can guess if you just consider any fixed row and or column and look for the Euclidean norm of this row or column. Right? So let's now study normalized matrix. After this normalization, eigenvalues will be of order of constant. Let's write them down. Eigenvalues obviously are real. Okay, there are n of them. And what Wigner's result says is that if you look at the spectral measure, which is random, there is a non-random limit. Right? So in other words, if you look at the number of eigenvalues less than x, so you consider the empirical distribution function, normalized by the number of all eigenvalues, of course. This is a random function, but as n goes to infinity, almost surely it converges weakly to non-random limit, which has a density. The density has compact support. It is supported in the interval minus 2 sigma to sigma. Sigma squared. And the graph of the density, of course, gives the name to the semicircle law. Okay. All right. A similar result holds in the real symmetric case. So you can consider an analogous ensemble of real symmetric matrices. And then assume that up from the diagonal entries are independent, identically distributed. Again, eigenvalues will be of order of square root of n, so you normalize the matrix. And if second moments are finite, then cosignus of order square root of n, under this condition, you have Wigner's semicircle law. The original proof was purely combinatorial, using the method of moments. After that, heavy technology of resolvent method was introduced by Pasteur and his school, and many others. Okay, very good question. So you don't need to know this, and actually I'll talk about this, but let's think about it. Suppose the first moment is non-zero, right? So then you can look at the matrix, okay, centralize all entries. So you can look at the matrix as the rank 1 matrix plus the matrix with all with the first moment 0. And obviously rank 1 perturbation doesn't affect the limit. So I will talk about this later, but obviously. Okay. All right. So a natural question then, what happens if second moment is infinite? And on the physical level of Riga, the answer was known for more than 10 years. On the mathematical level, it was just done recently by Benarus and Gianea, who proved the following. Consider a heavy-tailed case. So if you consider the tail of the distribution, suppose it decays like u to the power alpha. Alpha is between 0 and 2. L is weakly, is slowly changing function. So basically you can think about the case when it has a limit, non-zero limit as u goes to infinity. Or say you can think about the case when it's a logarithm, something like this. Right? Then obviously alpha from 0 to 2 means the second moment is infinite, as you can see. Right? And the first question is, what is the order of the eigenvalues in this case? So let's introduce a normalization. And if you look at this normalization, essentially, it's n to the power 1 over alpha, again, up to small correction, which is another slowly varying function. As you can see, for alpha between 0 and 2, this normalization is larger than square root of n. Right? So that what we are saying really is that typical eigenvalues are of high order. And then you study the normalized matrix. You study the eigenvalues. And what Benarus and again proved is that, again, if you look at the spectral measure, if you look at the empirical distribution function of the eigenvalues, then there is a non-random limit in probability, at least. For subsequences, they can also prove it almost surely. The limiting distribution, which is the analog of semi-circle law, actually is quite much more complicated. So in particular, the support is unbounded. And the tail of the limiting distribution is polynomial decaying. There are several ways to describe the limiting distribution. All of them are quite complicated. So you can describe the Fischer transform of it. And then there is some quite not very easy functional equation to solve. So I'm not going to write down the formulas, but let me just indicate the following important feature. So again, if you look at the, let's first look at the mathematical expectation of the empirical distribution function. Right? Then what we are saying is that there is a limit. This function, the limiting distribution, was proved to have density, except maybe on a complex set of zero capacity. And again, this density, I assume actually that has density everywhere, so let me write it down like this. And the density decays polynomially at infinity. Okay? All right. So let me write alpha. So this is a station with a global distribution of eigenvalues. And let's study a few important examples of Wigner random matrices. Well, the first example, which is very popular in computer sciences and related fields, is the example when matrix entries are, say, plus minus 1 or 0, 1. And actually, this was one of the first examples studied by Wigner as well. I will talk about this example later a little bit. The second example was introduced by Roland in his talk when you talk about the Gaussian entries. So let me write it down. Maybe here. So let's talk about the Hermitian case. Real symmetric case is quite similar. Introduce the following measure on the space of n by n Hermitian matrices. Up to the constant, which is known. Let's put normalization 2 here. The density respect to Lebesgue measure on the space of Hermitian matrices is given by this expression. So if you write down the trace, of course, in terms of matrix entries, you immediately see that it means that matrix entries are Gaussian, and they're independent from the diagonal. So let me write it down. This normalization 2 here means that variance will be 1 over 8, I think. On the diagonal, of course, you have real entries that are again Gaussian. And the variance is twice as large. So this ensemble has a very important property, is that the distribution is invariant under the change of orthonormal basis. That comes the name Gaussian unity ensemble. So again, let's consider the eigenvalues. Of properly normalized GU matrix. There are several remarkable features of this ensemble, and the first feature is that the joint distribution of the eigenvalues is known explicitly. So you can write down the formula for the joint density. Moreover, one can explicitly calculate what's called k-point correlation functions. And the remarkable feature is that these k-point correlation functions have determinantal form. So in particular, it will be clear in a minute that really if you look at spectral properties of the eigenvalues of a GU matrix, really all information that you will need to know is contained in this kernel. There is an explicit formula for this kernel, this projection kernel. And then really if you want to study the asymptotical behavior of the eigenvalues of such a matrix as n goes to infinity, you have to study the asymptotics of this kernel, perhaps after proper scaling. So let me write down the formula for the kernel. So formula, so I mentioned that it's going to be a projection kernel. And in a physical language, it's just a projection of the first n eigenvectors of the harmonic oscillator. In mathematical language, you just write down the following thing. You consider Hermite polynomials in other words, you consider orthogonal polynomials with respect to the Gaussian weight. Each pi L is a polynomial, its degree is L, and they are orthogonal. We with respect to the Gaussian weight. So anyway, one way or another, there is an explicit formula for the correlation kernel, and let's talk about the consequences of this. Okay? So what can we study with the help of these formulas? All right. Consider a real line. Consider some interval, let's say I, on the real line. Ask yourself about the number of eigenvalues in this interval. Let me denote the number of eigenvalues by this notation. So it's a random number. From 0 to n, in principle, remember the total number of eigenvalues is n. So it's integer valued, real, random variable. Can we study the distribution of this random variable? Because it's integer valued, random variable, we can study its generating function. So in other words, consider mathematical expectation of z raised to this power. This mathematical expectation obviously makes sense when z in absolute value is not bigger than 1, because then this random, a bounded random variable, so you can take mathematical expectation. Moreover, if you consider its Taylor expansion near the origin, right, what will be the coefficients of this Taylor expansion? This will be exactly the probabilities that there are k from 0 to, in this case, n, eigenvalues in this interval. So if you know the generating function, you have all information about the number of eigenvalues in this interval. By similar token, you can consider several intervals and study the generating function of the linear combination of these things. Okay? So the remarkable fact is that due to determinant of formulas, there is an explicit formula for the generating function in terms of the correlation kernel. What you have here is the following expression. Let me explain it. Consider L2i, so L2 space on the interval I. Consider the following operator on this L2 space. Let me denote by k subindex I. It will act from L2 space into itself. And this is just an integral operator with a correlation kernel. So in other words, so properly, perhaps I should also indicate subindex n here, because this kernel belongs to n by n G ensemble. Okay. So the kernel is quite a nice function. Actually, it's continuous. Therefore, if interval I is finite, or in some case it will be interval from some point to plus infinity, but if we know that kernel decay is sufficiently nice at infinity, this integral operator is trace class operator. So it has a full set of eigenvectors with real eigenvalues, right? And then what is written here is just Fredholm determinant. In other words, if we consider the product of all eigenvalues of this operator, okay? Think about finite dimensional matrix. Actually, you would think proper way because this is finite rank operator, really. In this case, so the problem making things more complicated than they should be, right? So one way or another, this is the Fredholm determinant, the product over all eigenvalues of our self-adjoint operator, and this formula is explicit formula for the generating function of the number of eigenvalues in interval I. You have a similar formula if you study several intervals. Okay? So then the wisdom is the following: if you want to know the behavior as n goes to infinity, the spectral behavior of the eigenvalues, the behavior of the eigenvalues, you have to study the asymptotics of this kernel after appropriate scaling. Okay? All right. So a particularly interesting case is when interval I is from S to plus infinity. Why so? Because then, if you look at the probability that there are no eigenvalues in this interval, right, what does it mean? It means exactly that the largest probability, let me call it L lambda 1, and I will also write super index n, because it's n by n matrix. Okay? So if you want, let me write subindex max. It's the largest eigenvalue, right? Is not bigger than S. Agree? In particular, by the same token, if you look at the probability that there are exactly k, no, not y, not more than k, no, exactly k, I'm sorry, exactly k eigenvalues here, right? What does it mean? No, I think here I probably screwed up. It should be less equal, right? It means that the probability that k plus 1's eigenvalue of our matrix is equal to the probability that k plus 1's eigenvalue of our matrix is not bigger than k, right? So one way or another, if you study the interval like this, you can study the asymptotic behavior of the largest eigenvalues, right? The question is, what is the appropriate value for S if you want to pass through the limit and find non-trivial limiting distribution of the largest eigenvalues? Now, if you look back at the formula for the kernel, it's expressed in terms of Hermite polynomials, and of course, asymptotics of Hermite polynomials is a classical result. So in particular, this suggests that if you consider the following scaling, near the right edge of the spectrum, the following thing happens. If you look at the correlation kernel, that it converges, first of all, pointwise to a limit, which is known as Airy kernel. Convergence is actually much stronger than this, so it will be trace plus convergence also. But there is a formula for the Airy kernel in terms of Airy function. This formula is again of the type of integral kernel, which gives you connections to integrable systems. We have to talk a little bit later about this. Okay. All right, so this Airy function. There is an integral representation, of course, for this function, but let me just write down differential equation. And if you know asymptotic say plus infinity, then you have this Airy function. Moreover, if you consider interval I, where t is fixed number of this form, right? And if you consider the corresponding integral operator with the kernel Tn on this interval, right? Then there will be convergence in trace class to the operator with the Airy kernel. Okay. So in particular, what you have then is a Feingold determinant converges to the corresponding Fredholm determinant and then goes to infinity, where here you have a returnal. Right? So what is the net result? If you look at the generating function of the number of eigenvalues in the interval, essentially from 1 to plus infinity, but you have this fine small terms here, right? And let n go to infinity, there's a limiting expression. So you have Fredholm operator of what? You have kernel, a kernel, and you consider integral operator on the interval t plus infinity. Right? Respect to this kernel. And there is a formula for this kernel here. In particular, if you want to study the probability that the largest eigenvalue of our n by n GU matrix is not bigger than this expression, right? And this suggests that the largest eigenvalue fluctuates around the right edge on the scale of n to the power minus 2/3, then there is a limit. And what is the limit? If you look at the generating function, right, of the counting random variable, the probability that there are zero points in an interval, the probability that this random variable is equal to zero, it's just the constant term in the Taylor expansion, right? So it is the value in the origin for z equals zero. So here it will be just this Fredholm determinant. Okay. So there are several remarkable things about this distribution. It's called Tracy-Vidan distribution in the Hermitian case. So it's Tracy-Vidan. I should write here also beta equals 2, because we study Hermitian case. There are similar considerations in the, okay, not quite identical, of course, in the, say, real symmetric case and quaternion case, but there are different limiting distributions, even though the scale is the same. In particular, there is a connection with integrable systems, and you can express the limiting distribution in terms of Penrivet 2 solutions. Okay. Right. I'm not going to write it down because probably it's well known. All right. So let's try to move slightly quicker to the following question. All right. So we have a limiting distribution of the largest eigenvalue. By similar token, if you consider fixed k, you can study the limiting distribution of the k's largest eigenvalue, say the second, the third, etc. However, when k, though fixed, becomes larger and larger, say k is equal to 17, the expression is more complicated, becomes more and more complicated. Fortunately, when k goes to the to infinity, as n goes to infinity, the expression again simplifies. And let me just write down what's going on. Let's just consider the case in the bulk. So remember, this is the limiting Wigner distribution, right? The largest eigenvalue I around the right edge and fluctuations of order n to the power minus 2/3. Let's study the case of eigenvalue number k. Let's suppose k goes to infinity as n goes to infinity, right? So that k over n converges to some constant, positive constant. So we're looking at the eigenvalue somewhere in the bulk of the spectrum. Okay. Let this constant be alpha. from 0 to 1. Well, what is a good, what is a good bet for to pinpoint lambda k? Well, obviously, you look at the Wigner-Shumashoka law. Right? And you find k to satisfy this. And then you hope that lambda k is pretty close to this t, right? Okay. What one can show is that the following result is true. So think about it for a minute. Suppose that eigenvalues were just independent random variables with a joint distribution given by Wigner-Shumashoka law. So you just have n independent points on this interval, right? Then fluctuation of lambda k from t would be on the scale of 1 over square root of n, force on central limit theorem. In random matrix ensembles, there is strong repulsion between eigenvalues, which makes the configuration much more rigid. So in this case, what's going on is the following. Essentially, lambda k fluctuates from t almost on a scale of 1 over n. Actually, you have small logarithmic correction. Okay. So there is a constant, well known. So we multiply by n. And there is logarithmic correction, log n. And the fluctuation is normal. Okay? So this is from recent PhD thesis of Jonas Haag, but was published in 2007, PhD in KTH, but was published, I think, already last year, 2 years ago, maybe. So you can prove similar result for the case when k goes to infinity, but the ratio still goes to zero. So when k is somewhat close to the edge, okay? Right? The main ingredient is the following fact. And it's quite a general fact, but let me just talk about it in the case of random matrix ensembles. Okay? So this central limit theorem type result suggests that if you look at some interval and ask for the number of eigenvalues in this interval, and then goes to infinity, you must have central limit theorem with variance really growing like log n. And this is the case, and it's a general case of this is a general result, essentially due to Kosin Leibowitz. And it was generalized, and finally there is a very nice in one interval case explanation due to Peres and Virach and their causes that this is the case when you have determinant correlation functions. And really in one interval case the explanation is pretty nice. You can just prove that if you look for the number of eigenvalues in any interval for any ensemble with correlation functions, then this number, it's a random number, it's integer valued random number, it is the sum of independent Bernoulli random variables. Okay, not identically distributed, of course, but independent. And then really what you have to do in this case, of course, if you have to look at the variance, and if the variance goes to infinity, then of course you immediately have central limit theorem. And if you have to study the variance, okay, let's think about GU case, right? You have just to look at this kernel. The variance can be expressed in terms of this kernel, and you have to study the asymptotics of Hermite polynomials, which basically is known. So it's okay, some technicalities, but really not much more than this. Okay, could you do this in the real symmetric case? So remember, you can introduce ensemble of real symmetric matrices with Gaussian entries by a very similar formula to the GE formula. And again, what you'll have is that up from the diagonal, you have ID Gaussian random variables, real valued. On the diagonal, we also have ID, right? But variance will be twice as large. And you can study k correlation functions, but they will be fuzzy, not determinants. And there is no general Kostin-Liebowitz theorem in this form for Fuffian ensembles. For GOE, however, you can reach this situation with the following very simple observation. Essentially, it's classical. It's due to days of in the 60s. But I think it was known by Dyson and people around him. But for Gaussian ensembles, it was really written and nicely done by Reins and Forrester at the end of 90s. And you see, there is a following general observation. Consider one GOE matrix. Okay. It's n-dimensional. Consider independent GOE matrix, but let's make it n plus 1. Okay, let me write it down. Right? Consider the spectrum of the first matrix. So you have n eigenvalues here. And consider the union as a set with the spectrum of the second matrix. So you have another n plus 1 eigenvalues. Altogether, you have 2 n plus 1 points on the real line. Right? Order them. And take every second from these points. Second, fourth, sixth, etc. When you do this, when you take every second point from 2n plus 1 ordered set on the real line, you get n points on the real line, which will be a random configuration. Okay? And this will be exactly what? It's exactly the spectrum of n by n GUE matrix. Okay? And again, it was known for circle ensembles for a long time. So basically then, what you have is that the number of eigenvalues here in some interval I plus the number of eigenvalues here in the same interval I after proper normalization converges to the Gaussian. Right? Here, if you want, you can even play nicer by just considering n by n submatrix, which will be another GOE n by n matrix, using the relation property. And what you see is that sum of two identically distributed random variables after proper normalization converge to Gaussian. And then you use Cramer's theorem, which tells in this case each of them must converge to Gaussian as well. So that's okay. So basically what I try to convince is that in the Gaussian case really you can describe all things precisely. The Kostin-Liebowitz theorem in the multi-interval case, I don't think it allows this nice interpretation in terms of Bernoulli random variables, there is still exists, so in particular you can study joint distribution of several eigenvalues. And you have multivariable central limit theorem. Okay. All right. So what can we say about inequality? What happens if entries are not Gaussian? And there are two ways to address this problem. One approach was introduced by Johansson and later extended by Benaroos and Pierce in the simple covariance case. But essentially what Johansson did, he considered the following. Consider n by n Wigner random matrix. So you have self-adjoint Hermitian matrix with IID entries up on the diagonal, but you don't insist on entries to be Gaussian distributed. Okay. Consider another independent from W matrix, which is GUE matrix. So it's another Wigner matrix, but now here you have Gaussian distribution of the entries. And consider the linear combination. Alpha is any real number, could be arbitrary small. So what you obtain, and okay, you have the sum of two independent Wigner matrix, of course it's a Wigner matrix, you normalize it appropriately. Right? What you obtain a Wigner random matrix, Hermitian random matrix, but with additional property that each entry has Gaussian component. Okay? And what Johansson was able to do, he was able to show that if W has sufficiently many moments, then you can prove inertiality in the bulk. In other words, if you look at point, say, near the origin, for example, and look at the distribution of the nearest eigenvalues, passes the limit and goes to infinity, you'll see the same picture as in the Gaussian case. And in the Gaussian case, one can obtain explicit formulas when you let n go to infinity. Again, you're playing with Fredholm determinants in appropriate intervals. The real thrust of Johansson's approach was based on two facts, really. First idea was introduced by physicists, in particular Brizan, Hikami, and Polyakov in the 90s, and was noted that if you have GUE random matrix and add non-random self-adjoint matrix, Hermitian matrix, then of course you obtain another random matrix, and then this random matrix again has determinantal correlation functions with the kernel, which will depend, of course, on the eigenvalues of W. And it can be shown, it's actually a pretty simple calculation if you use Harish-Chandra Itzkson-Zuber integration formula. Okay? So it's really not much more than that. And then, what you really do here is that first you fix W, right? You look at the matrix here. Of course, then distribution of the eigenvalues of this sum will depend only on the eigenvalues of W, because GE is rotationally invariant. So you have determinantal formula for correlation functions, quite a cumbersome expression, which will depend on all eigenvalues of W. But then really the idea is that for typical realization of Wigner matrix, this correlation kernel behaves in a nice way, and you have convergence to the sine kernel really. And it's a very technical paper, but again, the idea could be expressed easily, but of course the calculations are very non-trivial. Okay. And again, the same approach, but again with many additional technicalities and new ideas, was done in simple covariance case by Benarus and Pesh. Okay. Now, if you want to study the largest eigenvalues, one could hope that you can do something with the resolvent approach, perhaps. But really, the way it was done by the method of moments. If you look at Wigner matrix, with all moments, with even moments growing not faster than Gaussian moments, so you have sub-Gaussian matrix entries. For simplicity, it was assumed that odd moments will vanish, so matrix entries have symmetric distributions. And then if you want to study the distribution of the largest eigenvalues, you can really study the traces of your matrix raised to very large power. Why? Because if you consider points from minus 1 to 1, consider the sum raised to large power, really the only contribution, meaningful contribution, will come from points close to 1 in absolute value. Right? And then, if you want to study this, if you want to study traces of matrices like this, it was quite heavy combinatorial approach developed, which allows you to study the asymptotics, and really you have to study up to Sn proportional to n to the power 2/3, if you want to prove trace Wigner distribution here. Right? Okay. So, what else? And I have 5 minutes for the second part of my talk, really. Okay. Right. So let me just very briefly mention that if you look at the largest eigenvalues, the station becomes practically trivial when second moment is finite, or is infinite, I'm sorry, when the tails are heavy tails. Because then, again, it's really the proof which could be described in one sentence. If you look at such a matrix, typical matrix entries are much, much smaller than XTML, the largest matrix entries. And then you just consider approximate eigenvalues corresponding to these extremal values of matrix entries and just use perturbation theory. Really. And what you obtain Poisson law, Poisson distribution for the largest eigenvalues in the heavy-tailed case. So it's not complicated at all. Okay. All right. So what else? Yes. Okay. Recently, Sandrine, I thought about the case when matrix entries do not have symmetric distribution. For example, the third moment does not vanish. And this case was of interest and still is of interest, actually, the way I understand, to people in combinatorial community and computer science community, in particular because they're interested in the case when matrix entries are Bernoulli, but with non-symmetrical distribution. And if you look at the Seitz-Wigner matrix, first, and if you want to study the asymptotics of the spectral norm, there is a classical result due to Furedi and Komlos, almost 25 years ago, actually, which says that, remember, when sigma is 1/2, this is just 1, so it's in our notation just the right edge of the spectrum. Right? Here I'm just talking about the case when the variance is sigma squared. So just please have it, keep it in the perspective. And what Furedi and Komlos proved, they proved the following result using the method of moments. There were slight irregularities in the proofs, which were corrected by Van Wu recently. And Van Wu also extended the approach, and he proved slightly better estimate. Okay. Now, a remarkable fact is that in this approach, it proves at this point at least that it's quite valuable to use technique developed for Wigner matrices with symmetrical distributions. In particular, if you use that technique, you can immediately, really, in very elegant way, reproduce Van Wu's result, actually slightly improving it. I mean, the concept probably would be better. Okay. But then you can really work harder, and you can, 2 minutes. And you can prove not completely satisfactory result, but still better than everything on the table. You can prove this estimate for arbitrary small epsilon. There is one satisfactory point here that really it means that in our case we're able to study asymptotics of moments when power is bigger than square root of n. And there's some combinatorial reasons really that makes the case of power less than square root of n more amenable to studies. Second point is that, okay, can you talk about lower bound? Again, the original paper by Furedi and Komlos was claimed that the upper bound on the asymptotics of the trace gives you also the lower bound on the norm. I mean, and now probably everybody agrees that it's not the case. Okay? So then there are two ways really to do it. And the best way is to prove a law of less numbers analog result for the trace of matrix to the less power, which we did, bounding the variance. And then what we proved really is that actually the fluctuation of the spectral norm around 2 sigma is of this order. So also proved lower bound. Okay, so and probably Sandrine will talk more about combinatorial things in her talk, so, but I have to stop. Sorry.